everybody.
Hi.
I am Dana.
I'm Kristen.
This is The Darker Side of Life, the podcast where two best friends tell each other strange, creepy, weird, true crime stories, morbid stories, stories that are dark, stories that you probably don't want to talk about at the dinner table.
And unless you're us.
Yes, this is true. But we don't tell each other what we're going to talk about. And today I have a story, but before I start the story, I need to tell everybody that we will probably be taking a podcast break next month.
Yes.
I am going to go back home and watch my niece graduate high school.
Yay!
And then my parents are going to come back with me and visit for a while. And then I jump right into the busiest work month of the year, which is going to be insane. Help me, please.
So I do have, I'm supposed to have a story on the 31st. Are we going to do that? Or are we just going to go ahead and start our break after this one?
Oh, I don't know. I guess. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
I haven't started a story yet, okay. But I happened to look the other day and went, oh, we've got one more and it's on the 31st unless we just want to go
ahead. Well, maybe we can break after this one because I'm going back home the 25th.
Okay.
Unless, because the last day I'd be able to record would be the 24th.
Of next week?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, I think we do.
So, unless you want to record before then I could do it. But if not, then I figure we'd do it after.
Yeah, I won't be ready. So, yeah. Okay, people. I'll keep all that in so everybody knows what we're doing. Okay. You're a part of our plan, listeners.
That's what it is. I have to mentally look at the calendar and think of my schedule and availability and whatnot.
So, this will be our last one until later this summer.
Yes.
Okay, so nobody listen on the 31st. We won't be there.
Or just listen to one you've already listened to before.
Listen.
Go back for
a re-listen.
Yes.
Okay.
Right now I have a new one for you.
Cool.
I'm going to talk about the death of Phoebe Handschuck.
Oh!
Oh my God, you know this one.
I know this one.
Oh my God. I was not expecting that reaction.
You should see my audio in that moment. I just spiked.
I don't have video right now, but I can picture your face perfectly.
Oh, yes, I know the story. This one is crazy.
Oh, gosh, it is crazy. Okay, good. My sources are the Daily Mail. I know. news.com.au. This takes place in Australia. Mm-hmm. An article from allthat'sinteresting.com, phoebehandschuck.com, the Sydney Morning Herald.com, an article from Marie Claire magazine, a coroner's report, and there's a podcast called Phoebe's Fall. And it's done by the Sydney Morning Herald and the Age Newsroom in Melbourne, Australia. And since you're familiar with the story and you think it's crazy and you enjoy it, you really should check out this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think I've listened to a podcast. This was a while. I was living in Florida when I first heard the story. And I did listen to a podcast, but I can't remember what it was called.
These episodes, there's only like 6 or 8 episodes. They're like 30 minutes each or so. Mm-hmm. Maybe the longest one, maybe 45 minutes. But then they have these little mini episodes in between that are like 5-minute ones where they just kind of talk about something that doesn't really fit in the overall podcast. But mm-hmm. It's super informative. And the website has like a list of like who's who in the podcast, a list of questions, a list of timeline of what happens. It's so detailed and it's really well done. And they talk to some of Phoebe's family members and people involved in her death and the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So they have like some really good firsthand sources on that podcast. All right. December 2nd, 2010, an employee of the luxury Balencia apartment building in Melbourne, Australia, was looking for a broom in the garbage room on the lower floor. Something blocked the door, so she shoved harder. It turns out it was a woman's body. It was laying among all the trash bags thrown down from trash utes on the upper floors. The body belonged to 24-year-old Phoebe Handschuck. Now, growing up, she did have some issues early in life, though. She started going out and partying at like age 13. She would get drugs from people. Sometimes she would go a place and talk to some people and then come back and she would have some drugs. And people would just give them to her, which is concerning. She did like older men. That was her personal preference. Some people have said that she had almost an obsession, which would make sense that older men are giving a 13-year-old drugs at a bar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of creepy and predatory that they're taking advantage of that. But also, Phoebe, girl, no, please.
Right. Please don't do that.
She got kicked out of art school once after trying to have an affair with her art teacher. She was 16 at the time and the art teacher was 30.
That's definitely illegal.
It is illegal. And it's kind of ironic because her mom was on the podcast and she talks about this and she talks honestly about it because she said that she used to date older men. that were much older than her. And she saw a lot of, like, Phoebe. Or she saw herself in Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And she's like, although, like, some of this was technically illegal, she did have loving, stable relationships with people.
Yeah, except how stable is it if you're 16 and your boyfriend is in his 30s?
Oh, I kind of wish she would have quashed it. But Phoebe's dad, Lynn, is 14 years older than her mom. So her mom saw a pattern that Phoebe was falling into. It reminded her of herself. So she did get concerned. At 15, Phoebe even ran off and lived with an ex-convict and his child for 8 weeks. And she started on antidepressants shortly after, which she would continue taking on and off until her death.
Mm-hmm.
Phoebe would throw herself into her relationships and give them everything that she had. Her complete and total attention and everything, basically. She was dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
She went to the gym a lot. She was insane at training. And apparently she was fast-tracked to get a black belt in karate in 2 years. It typically takes about 5 years.
Wow.
I know. So she could probably defend herself pretty good.
Yeah.
She seemed like she was very physically tough. She loved to climb things. This is where I would have liked her, because do you want to go tree climbing and just climbing some things? Because that's what I did when I was a kid. Her friends told one story about how she got drunk once and she was climbing from roof to roof on top of buildings.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
No.
She was very physical, but some people say she could be borderline reckless. And these mm-hmm. aspects of her life will be important later. You will see why. You probably already know why, Kristen.
Yes, I do.
Because you know the story. The kind of men she normally liked were grungy, artistic types. And then she met Anthony Hampel. They called him Ant, in 2009.
Yep.
She was 23 and she was working part-time as a receptionist at a hair salon, and Ant was 39 at the time. So Ant was not like her other boyfriends, though. He wasn't a grungy, artistic type. He was more of a opening night champagne gala type of person. Mm-hmm. He was an events promoter and he had big name clients. He was founder of two entertainment companies. So those kind of parties and social scene were kind of his thing. He had to look affluent and successful.
Mm-hmm.
He came from a wealthy and well-connected family. His father was a Supreme Court judge, and his stepmother was a county court judge. His family had a lot of money and a lot of social status and a lot of reputation. Phoebe's brother, Tom, said that she wasn't really about that. She had a much lower-key lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And her family and friends liked him well enough, but nobody thought that he was the one. Nobody thought that she would end up with him forever.
Yeah.
In early 2010, she moved into his apartment with him after dating only a few months. For much of 2010, their relationship grew strained. Phoebe thought about leaving, and she was worried that Aunt might propose to her on a trip to Paris that they had scheduled to take later that year. And she was like, please don't.
That's a sign that you probably shouldn't be in that relationship if you're dreading being proposed to.
Right. We know she gave relationships her all, like she was committed. So I guess it would have to take something drastic to get her away from it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tom, her brother, said that Phoebe once confided in him that her relationship troubles in the weeks before her death, that she wanted out. And she felt like she was in a straitjacket. Between October and December of 2010, Phoebe left Aunt 3 to 4 times. She had always come back, though. Aunt said they never officially broke up during these times, but they argued a lot. 100% he says we were on a break.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very Ross and Rachel. She would take some of her things and go stay with somebody else or a family member or friend for a few days or a week, and then eventually she always came back. Her friend Vanessa, who was Aunt's friend first, but she grew very close to Phoebe, testified in an official inquiry about her death that Phoebe didn't feel like she had a voice in the relationship, and Vanessa said she told her to just lay out all your cards, and if you're unhappy, you need to leave him. And Vanessa is friends with both of them.
Right.
So she's probably given good advice if she knows that these two people are not compatible, that y'all should just split up.
Yeah.
I wish people would have listened to Vanessa.
Me too.
She cut her hair short and dyed it darker with Aunt, so she started changing her appearance a little bit. And Phoebe had a psychologist, and she told her that she was unhappy, and then when I tried to be me, it wasn't good enough for him.
No.
She said that Aunt was defensive and called him aggro, which is kind of slang for aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
She said that he made her feel stupid and she felt taken for granted in the relationship.
Poor Phoebe.
She once sent an email to her mom thinking about her 21st birthday present. And she said, hang on to that for me. She said, there may be a time when I need to get away without much notice and I'd like to have a flight available. Please don't mention this to anybody else and I'm not going to bring it up again unless I need it.
Oh my gosh.
If I said something like that to my mom, she would just be on a plane over here to come get me.
Oh, 100%.
That's,
my mom's not going to just forget about
heart.
That.
I know. Just like, bless her heart. Like, Phoebe is telling people, I wish that she could have found it in herself to leave. Mm-hmm. On her own. So December 2nd, 2010, the day she died was on a Thursday. And the week leading up to that day was very tumultuous for her. That Monday, she had an appointment with her psychologist who said that her mood was very low. She went to dinner with Aunt and his friends that evening, and it did not go well. Aunt kept shutting her down every time she wanted to speak, and so they fought almost the whole dinner. It ended abruptly. And then Phoebe had a screaming argument with him in the parking lot. Phoebe called a friend to meet her for drinks at a nearby bar just to kind of cool off. They were only mm-hmm. there for maybe half an hour. They just had one drink. I mean, it's a Monday after all. The phone rang 27 times in that half hour. It was Aunt every single time. So Phoebe got mad and threw her iPhone across the street.
Across the street?
Across the street. She is chucking this thing like a baseball into the wind or something.
She's done.
Get away from me. The iPhone was Aunt's that he got for her. And she also had a Nokia phone. So she had two phones. I guess she had problems with contactless. She just kept the Nokia for like contact lists and and things because it didn't transfer over. So she had two phones. The Nokia was hers. The iPhone was one that Aunt paid for. So earlier that week, she had a Skype call with her mom. She was back in Aunt's apartment. And her mom said that she asked about Aunt. And Phoebe kind of put her finger up almost to shush her a little bit because Aunt was in the next room. Mm. And she's like, shh, don't. We're not going to talk about him right now. Like, he can hear us type of thing.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to talk about him. That was a little concerning to her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt said that he had somehow retrieved the phone. I don't know if he found it or if Phoebe went back to get it eventually or whatnot. But eventually they found the iPhone. He took it to a repair shop. He said that Wednesday. On December 1st, the day before she died, she sent a group text to family members. And it was really out of context with the kind of text that she normally sends. Mm-hmm. The family said it was kind of weird and unlike her. And the text is questionable because it was allegedly sent after Aunt said he dropped the iPhone off at the repair shop.
So are we sure that it was sent by Phoebe?
That's
and not
people
Aunt.
Wonder. People wonder. And Aunt would later change his testimony and saying he dropped it off on Thursday.
Okay.
Which would give her time to send the message. I would like to know more about the iPhone repair itself. Like, what did it go in for? A cracked screen to be checked out? Could the phone still be used after it got chucked across the street?
Right.
Like, what kind of damage did it have to it? Because...
how bad was it?
Exactly. Because if it was non-operational, well, nobody could have sent the message. Exactly. And if it was just maybe had a cracked screen or something, then okay, that makes a little more sense. But furthermore... to clear up Aunt's, did I drop it off on Wednesday or Thursday comment, wouldn't the repair shop have a record of it?
Yeah, they should.
I feel like they would know when it came in. So you could easily check with them and say, when did this phone get dropped off? And I couldn't find that anywhere either.
Yeah, that's odd.
Well, as you'll find out later in the story, the police work is almost non-existent. So that's probably mm-hmm. something that they overlooked or just didn't do.
Bother to check.
Right. So Phoebe is not loving her life right now. She started drinking somewhat heavily and taking a medication called Stilnox to help her sleep, and she called out of work on that Wednesday. On the day she died, Aunt left for work around 8:30 a.m. About 8:45, she sent some emails to people. At 11:43, there was a fire alarm in the building. She's seen on CCTV walking out with the dog. She seems to be striding quickly, confidently. You know, she's not stumbling. She's not mm-hmm. drunk or anything. 7 minutes later, she goes back in. There's a picture of her going back in, but there's no video. And that was at 11:50. And that was the last time there was any indication of Phoebe being alive. She used the computer again when she got back home. And that's all we know of that day. Her and Aunt were due to have dinner with her dad that evening. But between noon and 7 p.m., somehow... she went into the trash chute of the 12th floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how her body ended up in the garbage room. All we have to go on from here on out comes from Aunt.
Mm-hmm.
His lawyers claim that he was nowhere near the building when she died. Swipe card records, because this is the kind of luxury apartment where you need a key card to get in on certain floors and like you can only access your floor and your elevator and your apartment or whatnot.
Right.
And the swipe records show that he got back at about 6 p.m. Her purse was on the kitchen counter. Her keys, her wallet, etc. Everything was there. Everybody says that Phoebe never left home without him. Who does? Who is going to leave your house without your keys and your wallet and your phone and everything?
Right. No one does that.
So she went somewhere. Even if she went somewhere with a friend and they picked her up, she would still take those things with her.
Exactly.
He said there was broken glass and blood on the computer and on the desk.
On the computer?
Yeah. Hmm. Phoebe's dad made a call to the iPhone at 6-something p.m. And it went straight to voicemail. This phone was probably still at the repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt called him back less than a minute later. And Aunt has never called her dad before in his life.
That's a red flag.
He says it's strictly a coincidence. Remember, they were supposed to have dinner that night.
Yeah.
So Aunt had a cigarette and he had a beer. He called some friends. He called a work colleague. He ordered Thai food for delivery from the exact same restaurant they were supposed to have dinner with her dad at.
Why would you order food if you're going out to eat?
That's what I was thinking. So why wouldn't Aunt call? I mean, they have phone records of these phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Aunt wouldn't call Phoebe's phone.
Right.
The Nokia, especially since the broken glass and blood and all.
Oh, yeah, that's a little concerning.
I mean, if I come home and I see all the Ryan stuff here and there's broken glass and blood places, I'm going to try to call him first.
The first thing, if it's not even that extreme, if you come home and your partner who you expect to be there isn't there, you're at least going to call to say, hey, where are you? What's going on?
Right.
You're getting ready to go out to dinner.
Yeah. Like, did your dad pick you up? Are we still on for tonight?
Yeah.
What's
are
the plan?
Are we still on? Do you want to meet there? What's going on?
Right. Well, he didn't do that. So the delivery guy comes with the food and he mentions police downstairs because he had heard coming up that they found a body in the building. Aunt says his, quote, his heart sank because he just knew it was her. This was part of the coroner's report based on his testimony in the inquest.
Okay, so you knew it was her, but all this time you didn't try to contact her to figure out where she was?
Or call the police or anybody?
Or call the police if you were that concerned? That, again, that's not... Your mind shouldn't immediately jump to that if you think everything's okay.
No. Phoebe was found on the floor of the garbage room, and this is where things get weird. Her sunglasses were found nearby, so she probably had them on her head or was holding them or something, but she probably, you know how you like put sunglasses on and then turn them into a headband?
Yeah.
So she may have been about to go out. Again, they're having dinner with her dad, so she was probably getting ready. Her jeans were around her knees, and she was wearing the same clothes that she wore in the fire alarm video. She had a severe injury to her right leg, and her right foot was almost amputated.
Mm-hmm.
She had sleeping drugs in her system, some of the Stilnox, 0.16 blood alcohol content, which is a lot,
yeah,
and antidepressants in her system. The blood on the floor of the garbage room shows that she crawled around for a while before dying. So she survived the fall,
yeah,
and likely her foot got caught in the trash compactor because you have to go through that before going into the bins, I guess.
Yeah.
And she was able to get her foot out and crawl around. There was blood on the back of the door to the room. So to me, that shows she's trying to escape. She's trying to get help.
Yeah.
She's trying to get out. Phoebe's grandfather was a retired police investigator. He has major problems with her death investigation.
I wonder why.
As we all do. Here's a list of some of his observations. There were two wine glasses in the apartment that were not fingerprinted. Now, if Phoebe was home alone all day, why would there be two wine glasses out?
Why two? Mm-hmm. And test the inside of those wine glasses.
The broken glass in the apartment was never investigated to find out where it came from. Police did not confiscate the CCTV from that day.
What?
They went down and looked at it. And the person that was showing them the video, they interviewed him in the Phoebe Swall podcast. He was like, I guess you're going to want to take this, huh? And he told them it's on a 2-day loop, which means in 2 days, in 48 hours, it starts recording over itself.
It's going
to
be
so gone. You need to take it before it disappears. Well, they came back 2 days later asking for the footage. Well, there is no footage now.
It's gone.
Because they did not take it when they found her body.
Why would they not have taken it?
Because they're idiots. There was almost no police work done in this case. And I can understand why her family is so mad.
Mm-hmm.
they asked for the hard drive because there's, you know, a hard drive backup. And it went missing. Nobody knows where the hard drive is, apparently.
Because that's normal.
Yeah. They did not seize computers or phones from the apartment. The blood that they found on the computer and desk, I guess, was not DNA tested.
And I guess they wouldn't be able to tell if, because she was banged up anyway. It's not like they could tell she had a cut on her hand or something where the blood would have come from her.
Yeah. But I mean, the blood in the apartment even.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because, I mean, broken glass and blood, was there a fight with somebody? Like, it could be somebody else's blood. I don't know. But either way, they didn't DNA test any of it. When they got there, nobody touched her body to see if she was alive. When the paramedics got there, they were not allowed to touch her body. Because the cops held them back. They just looked at her and said, you know, yep, she's dead. And then that was it.
So, if the cops are saying you can't touch her body, that to me indicates that they suspected some kind of crime.
Oh, girl. They ruled it a suicide.
Why? Yes. Yeah, see, I knew that. But if you're not letting them touch the body, to me that would indicate they would suspect something and not wanting evidence.
Yeah, contaminated.
To be contaminated, but then they go and they rule it a suicide. Doesn't make sense.
But not just that, but you don't know how long she's been in there. She could still have a pulse. She could have just passed out. Like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Like, she could literally have just been in there. So, check her to see if she's alive.
It seems pretty standard.
They fingerprinted the trash chute. There are what no fingerprints on it.
Oh, well, none. That's suspicious.
Not even hers.
Well, that's suspicious because it's a trash chute in an apartment complex. There should be a lot of fingerprints.
Exactly. The chute itself measured about 15 inches by 8 inches. It is slightly bigger than my laptop screen that I'm looking at right now.
And I do remember this.
I'm looking at my laptop screen. I am looking at my hips.
You probably are at this point, and I am doing the same thing, thinking... Nope, my butt's not fitting through there.
Yep, like my hips are very wide right now. There's no way I could fit in this thing.
She was pretty slight, and I'm not saying
yeah, she was very slender
for her. If I remember, she was pretty skinny.
Yeah, she was.
But even still, I mean, I'm looking at my computer screen and thinking, even at my skinniest, I don't think I would have been able to fit through that.
Right. So the coroner determined that she went down feet first with her arms at her side. Now, feet first would mean that your jeans would ride up at the ankles.
Say,
your jeans are not going to be around your knees if you're going down, like going down a slide or a chute.
No.
The iPhone at the repair shop was picked up by Aunt's father, the Supreme Court judge, and was not taken in by police until 3 months later. While cops were in the apartment, many of Aunt's friends and family came up as well. The floor, again, was only accessible by key card, which they didn't have, so he had to have had let them in. Mm-hmm. They just milled around and talked while police were doing their thing. It's very JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the first things I would do if I was a law enforcement officer would be like, you're going to sit right here and you're not leaving the spot right now.
Everybody gets separated.
Everybody gets separated. Nobody else comes in here if you were not in here when the crime happened or whatever. If you don't know anything, you stay away. So the coroner's report also mentions blood being on one of two elevators leading to the 12th floor and in one of the parking lots. Would have been really great if they would have done DNA testing on this thing. That would have been great. So her grandfather, the retired detective, decided he was going to do his own experiments. He took two of Phoebe's friends to the building and wanted to test if it was physically possible to fit into the trash chute. Well, it was too dangerous to do on the 12th floor, obviously.
Yeah.
He went to the people who made the trash chute, and they gave him an exact replica, like, directly from the manufacturer. Like, here's the model. Do your thing.
Sweet.
So, two friends about her size was trying to go into it. He videotaped it. Her friend Sarah went into it. And the trash chutes are the kind where it's on a wall, and it's flat. There's a handle. You pull it down, kind of like a blue USPS mailbox. You pull the handle down, you put your trash in, the lid springs back up, and it stays flat against the wall. There's nothing around it. There's no tables, there's no furniture, no chairs, no other handles along the wall. So Sarah tried to climb into it, And it's a few feet up, too.
Mm-hmm.
If her hands were at her side, Phoebe's, there's absolutely no way to get into it without leaving fingerprints. Absolutely no way. She is trying to get in this thing without, like, touching a lot of things. She has to lift one knee up and bend it, then lift her other knee up and bend it, all while balancing herself because she can't get, like, her butt over. Like, she's just, like, hanging by her knees, and she's about to fall over. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So, if there's no fingerprints on it, and they think Phoebe got in there by herself, how would she not leave fingerprints? Either number one, she's superhuman, or number two, somebody wiped them off. There's a show on Channel 9 there called Under Investigation, and they did the exact same experiment. And you can find the videos of this online. They have a woman try to climb into a replica chute. Again, the exact same kind. The woman's the same size as Phoebe. They taped it, and they put it on the news.com.au site. She cannot do it. She cannot. She's getting out of breath and tired from trying to, like, climb and brace herself and steady herself.
It's like a process.
It is. And it's taken her a long time to do. Not only that, but the door to the trash chute has such a strong spring on it. So it wedges you in. So after trying several times to climb in feet first, once she got in there, she could not slide down anyway because the door sprang shut and it wedged her in and she got stuck.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. This is terrible, but I just have a picture in my head.
I mean, it is kind of funny that she's, like, doing it and it's, like, trying to fit, squeeze into this itty-bitty little thing that's impossible to do. But, I mean, she had people around her to help her, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This is where Phoebe's love of climbing and her physical fitness level came into play, because a lot of people think that she was perfectly capable of climbing into it by herself. And also the drinking, the antidepressants in her system, and the sleeping pills, people think that she was maybe in some kind of drugged, like, intoxicated state, wasn't thinking clearly.
But I feel like that would make it harder. You are
100%
physically okay, but if she's drunk on medication, she's not gonna be that stable.
Right.
I feel like that's going to make it even harder for her to get in there.
The coroner mentions these things in his report, and he was saying that she was in likely some kind of sleepwalking episode from all the drugs and alcohol in her system, so she climbed in there on her own. Now, I don't know about you, but, I mean, I've never sleepwalked really, but I imagine something would wake me up eventually. I don't know if I could climb into a trash chute, arms to my side, and leave no fingerprints if I'm sleepwalking.
While what? Heavily medicated and drunk.
I would just be passed out in bed, not moving.
Which is why I feel like they should have tested the inside of those wine glasses.
Oh my gosh, for real. Further, he said that had somebody put her there, she would have likely had internal injuries from the free fall and, like, stopping at the end. Mm-hmm. If this makes any sense, I hope I can explain it good. He alleges that she had some sort of controlled descent because the chute was so small, so maybe she kind of wiggled around a little bit and went through it. And since she crawled around the room and left a blood trail, she was still conscious. So she was awake. That was not sleepwalking. I don't know. I don't know how somebody does this in their sleep and, like, wakes up when your foot is in a trash compactor and that's what wakes you up. I don't know. I don't buy it. I do not buy it.
I don't either. Not at all.
He was saying she intended to kill herself. She would have slid all the way down and stopped suddenly at the end, and there would have been internal injuries and she would have died, like, an instant death or just got caught in the trash compactor. So the coroner says that because she didn't have the internal injuries, that number one, she was under the influence of drugs, and it also means that nobody could have put her there. So he said basically it was suicide by misadventure.
Okay, so she just decided to climb down a trash chute.
Yeah, I guess so. Or she accidentally committed suicide because she was under the influence of drugs.
By climbing down a trash chute, it doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
No.
Since the case was considered a suicide, homicide police handed off her case and could not get her Gmail records. So that's another big clue that went overlooked.
Right.
We know that she used her computer a few times and sent emails that day. But they never accessed to see who she sent them to or what she talked about.
Or what she said.
Ant did not want to be the person to ID the body. He said he didn't want to see her. He didn't want to know how she died. Like, he didn't want to have the memory of her dead body, I guess. Yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
But he applied to be the next of kin.
Okay.
Real fast, he applied to be the next of kin.
How is he the next of kin?
I don't know.
They're not married.
You put an application into the coroner, I guess, and that's what he filled out. Eventually, her body was released to her parents, though, and that did not go through.
Maybe that's it's different in Australia than it is here. I mean, I don't maybe. Know, but I don't know. I don't know if we apply for next of kin here. I just thought it.
Yeah, I don't think you apply. I think it just goes to whoever is your next of kin. Next. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, too, if you're the next of kin, then you decide what happens to the body. So you can't exhume it for forensic testing or anything like that.
Was she cremated?
She was cremated.
There you go.
So Aunt put in a claim for the death benefit right after her, quote, suicide. So basically the life insurance policy. His dad, the Supreme Court justice, was helping him with paperwork and all, and he overstated their live-in relationship by about 6 months. So, to make him qualify for said death benefit, I guess.
All right.
This was before they even met, though. You'd think a Supreme Court justice would be a little more precise with the facts.
You would hope so.
As I reflect on the current status of the Supreme Court in the United States today. They actually say that in the podcast. Somebody's like, you think a Supreme Court justice would be a little more precise regarding facts in the law, but I was like, yeah, they're corrupt everywhere.
Did you call it a podcast?
I hope not.
I think you called it a podcast. Did I? I think you called it a podcast.
I meant to say podcast. I still may be a little congested.
I think it's your congestion.
Sorry, guys. I'm recovering from a really, really bad cold I had last weekend. I'm not completely over it. So Aunt and his lawyers opposed a formal inquest into her death. Her family was all about it. They wanted to know what happened.
Yeah.
I would want to know what happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would. So sure, she had problems. But again, her friends and family all said that she was not suicidal, but she would have not jumped feet first into a trash compactor. Mm-hmm. She left no note. There were candles burning in the apartment, which is very dangerous to do. And she had a dog, which she loved. So you don't leave candles burning with a dog.
No.
People don't do that.
I won't even leave my dishwasher on when I'm not at home because I don't want it to flood my apartment.
Your dishwasher.
I won't. I won't do it unless I'm home.
I never, ever, ever leave the dryer on, though.
Oh, gosh. No, never.
Never do that. Guys, my dad was a retired firefighter. You never, ever, 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 ever leave your dryer on when you're not home. Dryer lint is extremely, extremely flammable. And clean your lip trap every time you use it.
Yep, I just cleaned mine out.
It's my PSA for today.
It's bad. Yeah, I won't do that either. I won't leave windows open. I live on a third floor, so it's not like anyone's going to climb in, but I don't leave my windows open because I don't want my cat to fall out the window somehow.
She would.
It all revolves around my cat. Yeah, Everything I do revolves around the safety of my cat.
Yes. During the inquest, Aunt referred to her sometimes as his girlfriend and sometimes as his tenant.
His tenant?
His tenant.
Oh, okay.
When police found...
I would not be having that in a relationship.
Well, she wasn't that happy. Like, she said that he, like, demeaned her and made her feel, like, less. Like, not treating her as an equal. I mean, really? Are you freaking serious, Aunt? Come on.
If my boyfriend called me his tenant... excuse me.
I'm like, bitch, like, my name's on the lease. You're my tenant. Police, when they found her body, said that Aunt called her his flatmate.
Okay, so now we've not girlfriend. And flatmate.
I know.
Not girlfriend.
On the podcast, the family said that if you went into the apartment, there was no sign of Phoebe. That she was always writing or painting or drawing. She was very creative. Remember, she liked the artsy type guys, so she was a little artsy herself. But really, it was his apartment. Her grandmother, Jeanette, came over one day and said that Phoebe seemed uncomfortable in her own home. She said the whole apartment had this very controlled air about it, and everything had a place, and everything was in the place. And there was one time where they were having drinks or something, and then she got up to put them away, like, right away. And that's kind of unusual because, I mean, she's like, normally she would just wait till I left or not worry about it. You know, you just... do it when you do it, but she made a point to do it immediately after they were done.
Okay. So she had to keep things a certain way.
Right. Like, oh my gosh, I couldn't do it. So Aunt didn't want to talk to anybody at the podcast. The podcast.
Podcast.
The podcast. He rejected offers, interview offers, and he has not talked to anybody. They sent a letter. The lawyers sent a letter back. So that's
not,
Ant's
that's not
thing.
Surprising.
He's the only one that's withholding here.
Yeah.
So he never talked to her parents after her death. He kept saying that he was too grief-stricken to talk to them. Yet her parents were pulled together enough to go talk to him.
Right. And do a podcast.
Exactly. Her mom finally got a meeting with him. Finally, he agreed to meet with her. And she was advised to bring a tape recorder and tape the conversation. Number one, because Aunt's suspicious. But also number two, they're like, look, you're going to struggle to remember some things because you are in a really bad mental and emotional state right now. Like, this is going to be, this is going to be a really hard conversation to have. So tape it, which that's a really good reason, I think.
It is. I wonder what the laws are in Australia.
Oh, I don't know.
For taping, because they vary state by state here. I'm curious what they are in Australia.
They play a lot of this tape on the podcast too, on Phoebe's Fall, but I couldn't understand a lot of it. I think I have some kind of audio processing thing. I just couldn't understand what he was saying.
Is it an accent thing?
No, I think it was just a recording quality thing, and he sounds kind of far away. Maybe the accent's a little bit, but
yeah,
I didn't catch a lot of it. She said Aunt didn't look her in the eye one time the whole night, and his parents were there, the judges.
The
judges were there. So the families, Aunt's family and Phoebe's family, went their separate ways after her death. Each had their own memorial. Aunt had his at a yacht club. You know, because they're wealthy socialite type of people. And he had, like, pictures of her, and it was like a party atmosphere type of thing. Like a celebration of life thing, I don't know. Again, he's an events promoter, so he wanted to make a big deal out of it. The family had a very small affair of close family and friends at a more private spot near a lake where she liked to go, which was more Phoebe, like more of a personality, I guess. And there were some people who went to both because they all love Phoebe, so they're going to go to both memorials. And they said that Aunt's had, you know, the big party atmosphere, and the family one was more emotional and more just full of love, they said. That's their words.
Seems a little more personal.
Right. Aunt did not attend the cremation, and after she was cremated, they put her ashes on like a little raft, and they had kind of a Viking funeral for her.
Oh, really?
Her dad built like a little raft on a little beach, and then like a little boat. They put her ashes on it. And people wrote letters and things to put on the boat. They put marigolds all around it because she liked marigolds. He said that she was always a warrior, so they gave her a warrior's funeral.
Oh.
So they lit the boat on fire and pushed it out in the lake.
There you go.
That's kind of sweet. There's lots of loose ends. A lot of loose ends. The podcast, again, on one of the mini episodes, they talk about all these, and they have a list. I'm going to talk about some of these.
Okay.
There was a note found in her jeans pocket that was turned over to police 7 months after her body was found. It had a name and phone number on it, and it led to a fake address. We don't know who this belongs to or why she had it. We have no reason. Her Nokia phone has never been found.
Did it get crushed in the trash chute?
Or somebody hit it.
Or someone hit it. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
Right, right. That's good to do. So Aunt's always neat apartment that was in some disarray was never questioned. Like, why was there broken glass and blood places?
Yeah, the broken glass and blood, that's a big thing. That's not normal.
Why do you not see that as a red flag if you're such a neat freak? Not all the blood found in the apartment was DNA tested. The blood on the door of the room even wasn't DNA tested. I mean, it's safe to say it was hers, but still. I mean, I would still take a little sample. You never know.
Just in case.
There was no CCTV recovered on the night of her death. The hard drive that backed up the CCTV went missing. I talked about that before.
Yeah, that's weird.
Police did not take Aunt's iPhone the night of Phoebe's death. They let him keep it. They did not take Phoebe's computer from the apartment. And there was an early assumption by police that it was suicide. Early on. This is why
because
I wonder.
Because it's such a normal thing to happen. Someone going down a trash chute.
And again, a suicide assumption meant that police couldn't get access to a lot of Phoebe's, like her Gmail records or anything like that. Because it's not a criminal investigation. Now, again, I wonder who Ant called when he got home. He called a bunch of people. Did he
not
call
Phoebe, though?
Did he call Daddy Supreme Court Judge and say, help me out? I don't know. I don't know. He apparently doesn't like it when people accuse him of murder. Which
I mean, who really would? I mean, to be fair, I don't think I'd enjoy that either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, I mean, he is a very suspicious person.
Yeah, a little bit.
Now, as far as Ant goes, there's a lot of confusion and differing accounts regarding the repair of her iPhone. Hang on, let me try this again.
I thought something just happened to my computer.
Oh, no.
It's like, oh gosh, it's skipping.
So there's confusion and differing accounts regarding the repair of Phoebe's iPhone in the days leading up to her death. I mentioned how at first he said he dropped it off Wednesday, that he later backtracked and said it was Thursday, and there was a text message sent that was very mysterious to our family and very unlike something Phoebe would say. There was an unexplained call from and then back to a number in Perth on the night that Phoebe died that was never investigated.
Okay.
There was a record showing a call from Aunt to Phoebe's Nokia phone on the day she died. It connected for 13 seconds. Aunt is adamant they did not speak and he never called that phone.
Was it a butt dial?
But there's a record of it. I mean, I don't know. But remember, her Nokia phone was never found.
It's true.
And after they went and got the iPhone from the repair shop, the SIM card went missing.
How do these things keep going missing?
Because Aunt's dad went and got the iPhone and gave it back to him before it was turned over to the cops 3 months later without a SIM card. Again, the cops didn't do any investigating. They didn't confiscate anything. They didn't DNA test anything. They didn't even check her to make sure she was dead. They just assumed it was a suicide, which I think there's a lot of political connections going on.
Yeah.
That is just my opinion, everybody. So
this is always just our opinion.
Aunt's sister Chrissy was once caught dealing cocaine, apparently, and she wasn't punished for it because of the, quote, embarrassment it would cause the family.
Okay.
So she just got off, I guess. She made a Facebook post in 2016 saying, talking about Phoebe, quote, I only hope one day that the truth will come out regarding her death. Her and Chrissy were sort of close, Phoebe and Chrissy. Mm-hmm. They think that Chrissy may have got her some drugs and that the phone number in her pants pocket may have been to somebody that was trying to sell drugs to her.
Mm, okay, that would make sense.
Since it was never investigated, we don't know. But
I don't know.
Right. So that ends Phoebe's story. 8 years later, on June 24th, 2018, 25-year-old Bailey Schneider said bye to her parents when they left to go to the grocery store. She had a cigarette, a glass of wine. When her parents returned, they found her in the kitchen. She was slumped on the floor against some cabinets with a cord wrapped around her neck.
I don't know this part of the story.
You don't?
Maybe I don't. I don't know.
She had died of asphyxiation, and a toxicology report showed that Bailey had 3 times the legal alcohol limit, driving limit, in her blood and traces of cocaine in her bloodstream at the time of her death. Her parents found a half to about 3/4 finished bottle of wine when they discovered her daughter's body. So they think that maybe she was drinking heavily. Mm-hmm. The coroner in this case said that he was satisfied, quote, I am satisfied that Ms. Schneider, while affected by drugs, alcohol, prescription medication, and cocaine, upset by relationship
Don't
difficulties, made an impulsive decision to end her own life.
Don't say it. No.
The relation.
No.
What?
No, she didn't commit suicide.
Those relationship difficulties he was talking about refer to the day before her death, she had broken up with her then 51-year-old boyfriend,
no.
Aunt Hample.
I didn't know this part of the story.
Yep.
Okay, so now we have a guy who has dated 2 girls who have mysteriously died and it's been ruled a suicide.
Yes.
So she had a cord wrapped around her neck, but she killed herself.
Yes.
So was it a hanging?
In the kitchen. I guess so.
Or was it,
I mean,
she was strangled?
You can't strangle yourself. You'll pass out and you'll start to breathe.
Your muscles give out. Yes.
Like, even if you do strangle yourself to the point where you pass out, you will slump over, you will loosen your grip, and you will start breathing again. Because that's your natural reflex.
Yes.
And as far as kitchen cabinets, kitchen cabinets even strong enough to hang a person?
Well, you said she was slumped against
the
cabinets.
Yeah, she was on the
floor. Which made me think she was on the floor.
I think she was on the floor.
with a cord around her neck, yeah, which to me says strangling, not right, suicide.
Yeah. I couldn't find much regarding an investigation on her death or anything, so I'd have to keep, like, looking up some things about it. I get a lot of Phoebe's story because I think hers is the main one because it was the trash chute and it was very graphic and, like, horrible.
Odd.
Yeah. So that's the story of Phoebe Handschuck. Also a little bit of Bailey Schneider and
Mr. Ant.
Get out of bad relationships. If you're unhappy, leave. If you have the means to and the ways to. Some people can't, but...
Well, sometimes it's not some people don't have the means to. Sometimes it's you don't see the same problem that other people are seeing.
Right.
And it's scary. And if it's domestic abuse, you don't always feel safe.
Yeah. In my hometown, this was a long time ago, there was a guy that he was on trial for murder. This was in Tennessee, actually, but it was close to my hometown. And he, his wife ended up dead. And she was a soldier in the Army. And they kind of had a marriage of convenience because she was, it was said that she was a lesbian. And that he needed a green card because he was not an American citizen. So they had a marriage of convenience because at the time the military was in the middle of don't ask, don't tell. And gay people were not treated very well. And he needed a green card. So it's like it worked out for both of them.
Right.
So they had a marriage of convenience. Well, she ended up missing one day and he filed like a life insurance thing. And life insurance was like, well, you know, no body, no death. We don't know. So what had happened was, a little while later, a TV station in my hometown got a jawbone in the mail.
Oh, I remember. A human jawbone. I wasn't there when this happened, but I remember hearing about this.
Yeah, it's a pretty infamous story around my town. And they did, you know, forensics and dental records and whatnot on it, and they figured out it was the wife. So the life insurance paid out. And this is the second time. It was the second time somebody, his wife, had ended up dead, and he collected insurance money.
And that's what happens when you don't investigate something and then someone just goes on to possibly do the same thing all over again.
And I think he was found not guilty at the trial, though, but they just didn't have any evidence.
Yeah.
They just had nothing. And her body had never been found. To this day, her body's never been found.
Oh, but how did this person have a jawbone of her, but not the rest of the body?
I mean, if you killed her, you had the jawbone. That's what everybody was wondering.
Like, yeah, where's the rest of it? Why do you just have one piece that you're sending?
Right? Well, yeah, he needed something to confirm her death, and dental records would do it, so I guess he went back to the body?
Oh, God.
I know, that's insane.
Just get a job. Seriously. And get a divorce if you don't want to...
You need a green card, but you don't have to like murder people with life insurance money.
Yeah, you need money. Go get a job like the rest of us.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I remember from that story is the trash chute.
Yep.
And very suspicious. I'm not saying that Ant did it.
Yeah, apparently his lawyers are pretty aggressive, or at least they used to be, and they would try to shut down people that accused him of it. And again, I'm not accusing anybody.
It's my opinion that he's a little suspicious.
A little suspicious?
I'm trying to not get sued.
What is my opinion that he is suspicious?
It is my opinion that he is very suspicious. There's a lot of questions that, you know what? Maybe some of those questions could have been answered if there had been an investigation.
Right. Why was he opposed to the investigation even? Or to the inquest into her death?
Right. I think that you would want to find out what happened to your flatmate.
Your tenant.
Your tenant. Whatever.
So rude. I hope she haunts him.
It is rude.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thank you.
Again, we'll be on a break next month. We're going to be like Ross and Rachel.
And on the last day of May, which is a Wednesday. Anything then.
Yep.
But we will be back. Life gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah. Hopefully not with it. Bummer stories. Might have been a series of bummers lately. So I'll try to find something a little more lighter.
Well, it's going to be my turn when we come back.
That's true.
So pressure's on find something that's not so dark.
I'll still try to find something. Alrighty. So thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. No, wait.
No, we won't.
Oh, gosh. Never mind. We'll see you guys in July. See, I'm already messing it up. I don't even know anymore. No. I don't even know anymore.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see you guys sometime.
We'll see you guys later in the summer.
Yes. Enjoy your June.
And have a safe and happy 4th of July. Yes. And yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Lizzie Borden. I just realized that I named my cat after Lizzie Borden.